You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, so throughout the entire month of March, obviously, you know, folks, our march around the world, where we've had all of these different people from all of these different nations connecting with this, our American radio program, to share with us word from their locations. And it's been a wonderful series, as it always is. We're wrapping it up, though, now in a unique way with a little twist. Rather than having all of these different leaders and spokesmen and activists from international locations calling into us, now we're having an American journalist, Jason Kessler,
a globetrotter,
who is going to be telling us about his travels around the world in the flesh. So yes, while we were doing these interviews this month, Jason was actually traveling in body and spirit and in mind as well, to places I don't even know the full list of them yet, but he's going to tell us all about it.
I had a trip
with my wife a few years ago to Central and South America. We went to Belize, Honduras, and then Mexico. I think two places in Mexico. And I did a show on that, and it got a tremendous amount of feedback. So since then, the audience seemed to like it. So anytime we have somebody that we can connect with that can tell us a first-person accounting of, as an American, of what they're experiencing in these different places, I like to do it. I just thought it'd be a fun way to end our march around the world, and here to help us do it is the aforementioned Jason Kessler. Jason, how are you tonight?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back on.
Listen, you were game enough to agree to join us live from Romania a couple of weeks ago when you were in Romania with a pretty stark and stout time difference. But then we sort of mutually agreed on that, hey, let's get you home. Let's have you be the last guest of this special series. And at that point, all of your travels will be done. You can give us a full mosaic of it. It started, though, in Peru. And I was talking with Keith earlier. I don't know if anybody who has ever gone to Peru and from Peru gone and toured
are there any direct flights from
European
Peru
nations
to Romania?
Yeah, from Peru to Romania. That's a heck of a itinerary. Tell us, though, quickly, Jason, where were the different places you visited? Name them all in order.
Well, I didn't go everywhere to the same length of time, but technically speaking, I went to Peru, then I went to the Czech Republic, Hungary, Austria, and Romania, and then Germany.
Wow. Now, that is a trip. I don't know if anybody in the history of travels has made such an itinerary.
Well, let me ask you this question. What was the weirdest place you went to?
And then we'll take them in chronological
Austria.
Order.
Because Austria was like, I mean, I enjoyed every place that I went to except Austria. Maybe it was just because of Vienna, the capital city, being a mess. But it was like an American city, just, you know, Africans and Muslims and all kinds of people all over.
Celebrate diversity.
I had to leave. Yeah. So it was no fun. I guess they're punishing those people for their most famous former resident being born there.
All right. Well,
of course, it was King John Sobieski of Poland who defeated the Muslims at the Battle of Vienna and kept Europe from being overtaken from the east by the Muslims.
Well, I'll tell you, there was another famous former prince who gave the Muslims the what for, and Jason went to his castle. That's Vlad Dracula. But we'll get to that. Let's start in chronological order. It started in Peru. So you fly from your home on the East Coast to Peru. What do you see? What are the people like? What did you experience?
Well, it's very complicated, but, you know, Peru is a beautiful country. The people like dressing very colorfully. One of the things that is nice about it is as soon as you leave America, pretty much for anywhere, the constant anti-white propaganda stops. Like, people there still like white people and revere white people, and the ads actually have like smiling, happy white couples, which is ironic because, you know, there aren't that many white people there. But I like the capital city, Lima. It's a surfing community. But really, what the main thing is Cusco. If you only had a few days, you want to go to Cusco. That's the former capital city of the Incas, and Machu Picchu, the great fortress citadel of the Incas, is nearby, and it's just so majestic. And Cusco has so much mystique, you know, great restaurants, you know, alleys just teeming with music and life, and you have different layers too, because of course you have the Spanish conquest of the Incas, so you also have chapels and buildings of colonial nature that are old in their own right. So lots of beautiful things to see, exotic animals like llamas everywhere. It's a cool place.
I have shared on this program several times in the past that as a boy, and still to this day, I love reading and watching films and Discovery Channel episodes about the pre-Columbian cultures. I was always fascinated by that. Doesn't mean I wanted to be them, but I just thought it's so different and fascinating. And now, of course, throughout Mexico and other places, South America too, I'm sure, they have this LIDAR technology that can strip away the forest floor, and you can just see all of these still to this day undiscovered cities. And when I was down there, I went to, this was in Belize, I went to Altunha, which was a Mayan city. And when I was in eighth grade, we did a history project on Cortez, which I think has to be that point of first contact between Cortez and Montezuma. Had to be one of the most pivotal turning points in all of history. So, and I played Montezuma in the movie. So I am fascinated by this. You went to Machu Picchu. That is something. That is a world historical site, and that doesn't even begin to cover it.
Yeah, I would highly recommend people try it. It's, you know, I mean, it's not that expensive to go to South America as people would think. I mean, my one flight ticket was like, one-way ticket was about $200 and some change, nothing. And the hike isn't that arduous to get to Machu Picchu. Of course, you can go to a much higher vantage point, which also has some ruins, and look down on Machu Picchu, which is much more difficult, but you're not required to do that. And it's not just Machu Picchu that's there. There's a whole area called the Sacred Valley, which is full of historical sites, different Incan cities, and you can experience the food and the music and everything else that they got going on there, which is pretty incredible.
Jason, this is Keith. I have an instinct or a hunch, and you can tell me that it's right, whether it's right or wrong. I think the Spanish and the English were different types of colonizers. The English came in and actually settled and took over the nation or the area that they colonized. On the other hand, the Spanish, I got the sense that basically they wanted to go abroad, make a hatful, and then come back to enjoy it in Spain. And therefore, the former Spanish colonies are much more indigenous and their culture is than America and Canada.
We'll touch on that with Jason. Park that question in your mind, Jason, and we'll get the answer when we come back from this break as we wrap up our march around the world with a man who just took a march around the world quite in fact. And we're learning about his travels this hour. Jason Kessler, Mark.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com. Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Said, folks, anytime we can get a guest on that's one of our regulars to tell us about his travels abroad, I think that makes for an interesting interview. We did that last fall with Mark Weber back in October of last year. Mark had gone on a family vacation to Albania, Montenegro, Bosnia, Herzegovina, and he was on, and that was an interesting broadcast tonight. We're wrapping up March Around the World with Jason Kessler. Jason, we're talking about your trip to Peru right now before you take us over to Europe with you. But Keith was asking about the differences in the styles of colonization between the English and the Spanish. I would say one thing, though, is that the English ran into tens of thousands, of American Indians, whereas there were millions of Indians in Central and South America to deal with. So a little bit different there from the jump.
Is Peru more indigenous, their culture, than, America is not Apache, but is Peru Inca?
In the Cusco area, it is. In the major city, it's much more modernized. People don't wear the traditional clothing. It's very similar to a lot of the other countries that I visited, like Romania. You might have an image of the traditional clothing that those folks wear, but really, you see those in the shop windows, but no one's wearing them except up high in the mountains or in the remote villages where it's hard to access. And so Cusco isn't that hard to access, but it's much more indigenous in that area. And I will say the history of the Spanish and the colonialism is a major part of the historical aspect going on there. And it's way, way more complicated discussion than we can possibly do in this time frame. Because, you have all this baggage that the left is trying to put onto white people generally over the history of colonialism. And then there's so many layers to it. There's the layer about the fact that it wasn't just white people conquering each other. It was the Indian peoples were fighting amongst themselves and conquering one another. And the Inca civilization was a conglomeration of conquered peoples. And then you also have, lots of other historical details about, some people on our side will take a reactionary position and be like, good, this is a display of how much better white people were at conquering people. But I also think that that's not necessarily getting to the truth there, because basically they're doing, the left and anti-whites are doing that to us now and tearing down our Confederate monuments and stuff. It's a very, very complicated discussion. And I'll just wrap it up by saying that I never felt like I was beat over the head with any of those types of conversations by the tour guides or anybody while I was there.
That is how I wanted to end this leg of it, because we spent a lot of time in Peru. You went to that whole assortment of European nations. We got to touch on that. But that you mentioned it earlier. You don't think that the level of anti-white animosity is as prevalent in South America as it is in our own home nations?
No, I mean, all of the stuff that you experience here is just not there. I mean, you don't even really hear rap music there. They love white people, and there's like tons of like 80s and 70s music you hear. Everybody's listening to like Phil Collins and Rod Stewart and stuff. It's like being transported back in time.
I could go for that. All right. Well, as you transported across the Atlantic, now I got to ask you, normally a guy would say, you're sitting down, you're making your travel itinerary, you want to go on a big trip. You either go to like a place like Peru or to Europe. But how did you decide when you were sitting down, I want to go to Peru and then I want to go to Europe on the same trip? That just seems very unusual and very interesting.
Well, it's just a psychological thing that I work very, very hard in my work season. And I had certain things that I specifically wanted to see. And I didn't want to have to wait and book in them on other sides of, you know, my work season. So I wanted to see Machu Picchu, and I wanted to see what Eastern Europe was like, specifically the castles of, you know, the historical Dracula of Vlad the Impaler.
All right. So you leave Peru. Where do you land? What do you do?
So I went to the Czech Republic. It was just specifically Prague, the capital city. And my mind was blown because I haven't been to Europe since my red pilling process, and I've never been to Eastern Europe, and all I've seen from Europe is just stuff, basically propaganda from our side about all the real stuff that's going on in certain countries, like the Muslim rape gangs, and it feels like all of Europe is just as bad as America. But I didn't see anything like that in a country like the Czech Republic. It was pretty much all white people, even in a place like the airport in the capital city, where you would expect there to be the most diversity. The people were just, you know, beautiful, like some of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it's really shocking to see how beautiful they were. And everything, the plaza in the capital city directs to a beautiful, majestic museum, which looks like a palace. And it is the most incredible museum I've ever seen. It's got stuff related to the history of Bohemia, but also natural history and, you know, animals that lived in prehistoric times brought to life in like vivid color with, you know, the most amazing recreations. I was really floored. Also a great place to have a meal, have a beer. They really highlight their taverns, their ancient taverns, as a big tourist attraction. I couldn't recommend it highly enough, because you go in there like, and there's one that's medieval, for instance. It's really from medieval times. And you go in there and they play act as if you have transported back in time. The food is delicious, you know, melt off the bone, pork ribs, mead with a kick, you know, beer that they brew right there in the medieval tavern. And they're doing belly dancing, lute playing, magic tricks. It's really incredible. I love the Czech Republic.
Ladies and gentlemen, be sure to follow Jason on Twitter as well, at The Mad Dimension. You can watch some of his extended travelogues. He's given us a condensed version tonight for this particular platform. But you can also follow Jason's work as a journalist at jasonkessler.us, also VDare and UNS, amongst other places. So, all right, Jason, I would love, I have been to Europe, but not in a long time, and I would love to visit that part of Europe to see some of these castles. I mean, these fairy books, I mean, you know, so many of these villages in Europe look like the fairy tales. I mean, it just doesn't even look like something you would never see it here in Strip Mall USA. It looks like it from another planet, Keith.
Yeah. Could you say this, basically, the less touched by the West, the better, wherever you went?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been to Western Europe before, and it's much more like America in my memory. I remember seeing a lot of African migrants and stuff, and I just didn't see that much. You know, I did see some EU propaganda with like a white woman and a black man touting diversity. But ironically, I just didn't really see that many black people anywhere in Czech Republic, not very many in Hungary. And I don't think I ever saw one in Romania.
It must have been terrible to be deprived of that diversity. And I wonder over there.
Did you see Ukrainian refugees anywhere?
Only a gentleman that was staying at a hostel that I stayed at. And he was just a workman. I guess he was on his way to maybe the Black Sea, I think, to captain or to ride on a boat whatever his job was.
I would imagine that there's a difference over there, as there is here, between rural and urban. Going to a place like London, obviously, is a different experience than going. I was in the very small town on the Rhine in Germany some years ago, where Martin Luther was tried at the Diet of Worms. And it still looked like, as we mentioned before, that picturesque fairy tale storybook type of setting, with the cobblestones and the small town vibe and the bridge and the tower with the clock on the bridge. And so did you see any of that, Jason? Did you travel to any of the smaller outlying areas,
rural areas?
Well, mostly in Romania. I dedicated more time to that, you know. So most of the places I went to were still sort of touristy, because if you go too far outside the tourist areas, people aren't going to speak English. I went to Sighișoara, for instance, in Romania, which is the oldest fortress city in the world. I believe it's the only one that's still occupied by people. And it was the birthplace of Vlad the Impaler. So it's pretty cool. And yeah, there's, you know, cobblestone streets and, you know, ancient towers in each corner of the city, and an amazing clock tower that overlooks this humble abode that he was born in.
Exactly. And, that's the word I was looking for. No, I was just going to say, we're coming up on a break. I want to come back to Romania. I really want to spend a minute there, because that's such a fascinating history there. And clock tower, that was the word I was looking for a moment ago. Jason Kessler telling us about his world travels this month. And he'll continue right after this.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Richard Johnson. Is today the day that Donald Trump becomes the first former president of the United States to face a criminal indictment? Looks like the answer is no. The grand jury in New York is not meeting today. And jury members have been told to stand by for a possible meeting tomorrow. All this on the case in question, hush money paid to adult film actor Stormy Daniels.
Hush money payments in and of themselves are not illegal.
But criminal defense attorney Caroline Pelosi adds,
in this instance, what is a crime is the falsification of that payment, how they document it on Trump Org's business records.
If and when there is an indictment, what's next? Here's attorney Jesse Weber.
It seems by all accounts that if he's indicted, he's going to voluntarily surrender. He will surrender himself to the Manhattan DA's office. He will be fingerprinted. There will be a mugshot.
All that would probably happen next week. It's an active manhunt in Denver for a student who opened fire on two teachers at a high school this morning. The two who were wounded are in serious and critical condition. Across the USA, two Shelby County, Alabama sheriff's deputies were wounded while doing a welfare check. One person is under arrest. No word on the conditions of the deputies. The Federal Reserve wraps up its two-day meeting today. Board members are deciding whether to raise interest rates to try to cool inflation. Recent strong job numbers hint at another hike, but the failure of two banks this month could influence the size of the increase. Many on Wall Street believe the hike will be just 0.25%. Shoe store chain Foot Locker is closing 400 stores around the USA, mostly in malls. But it also says it will open new freestanding so-called concept stores by the end of the year. School is out for a second day in Los Angeles as school staffers are striking and teachers are honoring the picket lines. The union wants a 30% pay raise for its members. The district is offering 23%. No new talks are scheduled. This is USA News.
Hi, this is Joe Cordell with the law firm Cordell & Cordell. When the prospect of divorce becomes a reality, you need a partner that you can count on. If you're a man in this situation, consider contacting Cordell & Cordell. We've helped men navigate complex legal matters for 30 years.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firms online at CordellCordell.com. No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the quality of legal services performed by other lawyers. Online at CordellCordell.com. CordellCordell.com.
Do you have a story to tell? Bring your story to life with audiobooks. Great stories deserve great storytelling. Audiobook Network provides professional voice actors and full production services for every author's manuscript. From narration, production, and editing to distribution, promotion, and sales, Audiobook Network handles everything. If you have a print book, ebook, or even a manuscript, call Audiobook Network now and get our free audiobook guide. 800-734-1229. 800-734-1229.
Welcome back. Jason Kessler telling us about his travels around the world, to South America and Eastern Europe. Jason, in which part of the world were Americans, how are you received in Peru as compared to Eastern Europe? I could see perhaps, and this is just me guessing, in Peru, Americans sort of a little more glamorous. In Eastern Europe, are you received as well? I mean, I certainly, you know, as an American, don't feel quite proud about that. I identify more as a Southerner than an American. What do they do when they come into account with an American in places like Romania?
I never experienced anybody that was hostile to me. I mean, I think that their politics there are a little bit more to the left, what we would consider. So I did run into a few people, like an Australian and a Romanian. The thing that they're shocked by is, oh, they can't believe that we allow people to own guns. But I never had anybody that was like anti-American. I never saw anybody okay. express anything anti-white. The only place that I really had a negative reception, as I said, was when I went to Austria. And I commented to two people about, like, what in the world is going on with your country? Where are the Austrian people? One was a young woman. And she freaked out on me and called me a racist and was, I don't know, saying it at the top of her lungs, hoping somebody was going to come and punch me or something. And then I talked to an older gentleman, and he was like, yep, it's our social support system that they're coming for.
Well, and so, again, as you mentioned, Austria, much more like Western Europe and the United States in that regard. You probably felt more at home there, not in a good way. But thankfully, you got to see places like Eastern Europe. And let's talk about Romania right now, which is just still a land really shrouded in sort of mystery. I mean, not a lot of people know the history of Romania. I mean, certainly we've all heard of Vlad the Impaler, Vlad the Third, Vlad Dracula. You went to his castle. And but what's the way of life there? What's the culture like in Romania compared to some of the other places you visited?
Yeah, it's a very conservative culture, even compared to other places in Eastern Europe. It's still very religious, very Christian country. Things still close a little bit early in some places. But you just really don't experience too much of the the same modernity that you do in a lot of places in America. Now, that being said, one of the downsides of, you know, not just Romania, but the other countries that I went to is they don't listen to white people music anymore. They all listen to, you know, black music and no guitars. It's all like electronic stuff. So their music sucks. And that's where you kind of get some of the American influence. But outside of that, it feels like you're just in a totally different universe where all of the stuff that you normally are concerned with, the propaganda that constantly assaults you, it's just not there anymore.
The history of Vlad the Impaler, people might not know. You think of Vlad the Impaler, he's impaling these Muslim enemies, these hordes that are coming into Europe. Obviously, he must have won. But he didn't. It was a war of attrition. He fought in exile for some of that. And eventually, I mean, he was killed. And the Muslims had a foothold in that part of Europe for a lot longer. It just didn't end with him. And it wasn't like, and I had this interaction with you while you were over there. You were doing a video on Twitter and I commented to it. And I said, you know, would he have been recognized as one of the, not that he wasn't a great Christian ruler, but would Vlad have been recognized in the same breath as Charles Martel and Jan Sobieski had he won and had he routed and had he been able to take out the Sultan that night at that battle, that famous battle Is he known as Dracula because he lost and the victors write the history, or what's your take on that?
Well, as far as the Dracula myth, I just, as I was saying on Twitter, I don't think that anybody could have overshadowed Bram Stoker's Dracula. It was just such a monumental piece of literature in the Western canon, and, you know, spread the Romanian vampire myth, you know, throughout the world. But yeah, certainly there was a moment where Vlad the Impaler could have achieved an even greater victory by taking out the Sultan. But for those who don't know, he really accomplished so much. He stopped the Muslims from advancing into Europe. And it was sort of an epic revenge vendetta, because his father, Vlad Dracula II, was, executed by the Ottoman Turks, by the Muslims, and they kidnapped Vlad and his brother and took them, south into Turkey. And so they whipped and they beat Vlad to try to convert him to Islam. One of his brothers, who was a traitor, actually did convert. The other one had his eyes burned out. And so this guy had, a huge chip on his shoulder. And what ended up happening is he eventually got free. He not only, before he could even fight the Muslim Turks, he had to reestablish his kingdom because other people had taken it from him. So he engaged in a really vicious and bloody, no holds barred battle with the usurpers to his throne, and then began this essentially crusade against the Turks, impaling them in the forest. And there was a moment called the Night Campaign, where Vlad tried to sneak into the tent of the Sultan and assassinate him. And that's the moment you were referring to. But by some accounts, Vlad was led into the wrong tent by accident. And by other accounts, the Sultan was expecting the raid and fled before it could commence. And ultimately, yeah, they did kill Vlad, but they also killed the Sultan. Just about everybody in that time died a horrible end.
Yeah, it wasn't the outright rout of a victory that you saw at Vienna or Tours, but yeah, make no mistake about it. Just because it didn't end that definitively, he did absolutely stymie the advance and do a lot of good through his campaign. And that's just it was a war of attrition. It was a long, 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 hard battle that they inflicted upon the Muslims. And anyway, interesting history. If you don't know the history,
what are present day Romanians like?
Good question. Yeah,
they're good people. They're sweet people. One thing that's interesting that I can share. People may have heard about gypsies. We don't have gypsies here. There, they don't have black people, but everybody complains about the gypsies. They're criminals and they're thieves and they're dishonest. In my mind, I was picturing, old wives tales and fables about monkey's paws and these guys traveling from town to town, fortune tellers. You know what they are? They're Indians. They're actually like low caste, outcast Indians who were exiled, and they marched all the way from India to Europe. It's pretty incredible. So you see all these Indian guys, and they're like, why are there so many Indians? But these are the gypsies.
Well, what's her name? Cher was the product of a gypsy father and an Arkansas mother.
Gypsies, tramps, and thieves.
Yeah, right. And that was always a theme in her music, if you'll think about it.
Well, I don't think you even know this, Keith, but Jason has a picture of Cher with her latest he ain't Sonny Bono, I can tell you that. But that's another thing. We don't want you to look at that, but we do want you to go. We don't even want you to know about that, but we do want you to go to Jason's Twitter at the Mad Dimension, because there, if you scroll back throughout the month of March, you will find numerous pictures and videos of him live on the scenes at some of these places he's describing. It's wonderful to have him paint this verbal picture tonight on the radio with us, but it's also something else to actually see it, to have him show you the pictures as he was walking through these castles and these different places around the world. And they actually do sort of lean into the Dracula myth, correct, in Romania? They kind of play into the Hollywood Dracula a little bit for tourists.
Yeah, sake. Some of it's a little silly. Like, if you go to his actual birth home, like, I totally recommend going there, but they have sort of over-commercialized it. Like, there's a lot of tacky, you know, Nosferatu-looking merchandise outside, and then if you go in, they offer you to go into Dracula's room, and I'm thinking, oh, well, this is going to be a historical setting, and we're going to see what it was like to be born in his time, but it's like spooky music and red lights and bats and a guy dressed up in a vampire suit saying boo.
Oh, come on. Well, I mean, what do you got to do? I guess you got to give the people what they want, right, Keith?
Yep.
Anyway, but no, he was certainly Vlad the Impaler, hero for our people, Jason?
Absolutely. I mean, a really unheralded hero for our people. I mean, who knows what Europe would be like without him? There would be a whole lot more Muslims, that's for sure.
He's like Dr. Pepper, so misunderstood.
We're going to take one more break. I am really enjoying wrapping up March Around the World this way. I'm going to touch on with Jason. We're going to talk with Jason and have him touch on the countries we haven't mentioned yet. Stay tuned.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Hi, TPC family. This is your host, James Edwards. Our friends at American Free Press have a special offer for listeners of this radio program. Subscribe to American Free Press today using coupon code TPC for half off the regular price. AFP is America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues from an America First perspective. Subscribe today for 1 year at just $29. That's half off the regular price. And receive a free copy of AFP's recently published report on George Soros, a $15 value. Visit AmericanFreePress.net today, coupon code TPC. Subscribe now at AmericanFreePress.net, coupon code TPC.
Welcome back. One more segment with Jason Kessler. One more segment in March Around the World. I want to thank again, one more time, our guests this month from England, Australia, Canada, Croatia, Brazil, Belgium, Sweden, and tonight, South Africa. Jason Kessler wrapping it all up with a twist, talking about his travels as an American to all of these different places. We've talked a little bit about Peru. We've talked a little bit about Romania. Jason, what haven't we covered that you'd like to share with the audience? Give us the total best and worst of your travel. I don't get it, you know, worst is I'm sure there wasn't anything that was unbearably bad, but the best and the worst.
Well, I was only in Germany unexpectedly because of a layover, and I had enough time to spend a night in Frankfurt. So I can't really say too much about it with just one night, other than it was not nearly as bad as I thought. I was expecting Germany to be like what I was describing in Austria, and based on what I saw, I just saw a lot of German people, and it was cool. So I'm totally planning to go back there when I have some time. But the one that I spent more time with was in Hungary. I went to Budapest, and Budapest is really cool. I would totally recommend that. It feels like it's at the very edge of the European world. Like, by that, I mean, it feels like it was just in constant conflict. So when you go to the Buda Castle, which is really the main highlight of Budapest, it's the castle of the Hungarian kings. It's just been controlled by so many different people. The country has gone from being pagan to Christian to being conquered by the Turks and becoming Muslim. It was a communist country, then it was a fascist country, then it was communist again, and now it's whatever, you know, Hungary is today, sort of a neoliberal country. But the Buda Castle overlooks the whole city, and it's got an incredible history there. It was the site of the last stand of the Wehrmacht during World War II, and it looks like that. It's just got, like, awesome, impressive, like, eagles and griffins and many other statues, but there's also, like, a lot of brokenness and bullet holes and stuff like that from the conflict, you know, from the bombs and everything else that was hitting that castle during World War II. But yeah, it's a really majestic spot, and you learn about just all of the turnover that was going on in Hungary, and the fact that there still is Hungarian people that are white with all those conquerors coming through is a real testament to the hardiness of those folks.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, talking about the Balkanization or an eventual breaking up of the United States as we know it is very alien to our people. But in Europe, that was just a way of life for centuries. I mean, you never knew what the borders and boundaries and rulers and governments were going to be.
We really don't realize.
Yeah, absolutely.
How
and they had
the
a totally different culture in those places than we did. A lot of those countries that were behind the Iron Curtain during communism were totally cut off from American culture. And that's one of the things that's great in the Buda Castle was showing you, like, the toys and how they viewed themselves. You know, like, in America, we had, like, G.I. Joe in their time, you know, they had, like, the Italians and, you know, the German leaders, because, you know, Hungary was part of, you know, the Axis during World War II. And then, you know, during communism, they had, like, knockoff versions of a lot of the stuff that Americans had, you know, like cowboys and Indians and stuff. It was really, really cool to see how a culture developed in total isolation from America.
You know, I think we don't realize how blessed we are to be in the Western Hemisphere, protected by two large moats called the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean. There was no need for us to be involved in any wars. And, you know, it's just a shame that we did get involved in those wars, because we complicated European history in bad ways, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, but maybe those people had the last laugh, because my impression was that, you know, there's still something that they can save of their historical lands there. You know, they're ancient people are still the super majority in these countries. And then as soon as you come back to the United States, it's like, you know, you don't see, like, a beautiful German person at the airport, or a beautiful person from the Netherlands or something. You see, like, a sassy Latina and African, and it's a mess. Immediately you're assaulted by political propaganda. Here we're an occupied nation here.
Yeah, well, and Keith, you always call it the bar scene in Star Wars. Any of our international airports, but hey, Jason, of course, Viktor Orban over there. You know, we haven't given nearly as much time to Hungary as perhaps we should. We're doing that right now. But Viktor Orban, did you say that you consider it to be a neoliberal type of a situation in Hungary now? Did I hear you correct?
Well, I don't mean it as an insult, but yeah, I mean, none of these world leaders anywhere are really out of keeping with the world order. You look at how Trump is just a minor deviation from what the Democrats would want, and they're going scorched earth on him. I think it's a similar thing with Orban. I think that he's a good leader, you know, and he has good values, but no leaders are going to be totally disconnected from the others and the globalist push that's going on.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I certainly, some of the things he says would be right at home on this program or with anything that you've written or done. But at the same time, I guess if he was too much of a threat, they would have taken him out by now. Something to consider, although generally I certainly have a favorable opinion of Orban and the type of government they have there with regards to protecting the Hungarian border, et cetera.
What do the Hungarian people think about Orban?
I mean, they seem to love him. But, you know, I didn't really spend a lot of time speaking to folks about Orban. But I will say this, is that if you want to experience what it would be like to live in an ethno-state, a lot of these places like Romania and Hungary are very much like that, whether it's through concerted policies or not. I'm not an expert on that. But for instance, here's something that your listeners would probably find interesting. When I was in Sighișoara in Romania, the home of or the birthplace of Vlad the Impaler, like I said, I didn't see any black people. I didn't see any Latinos. I didn't see any non-white people. And I looked it up because a lot of times you notice there's like a Jewish district in these cities. So I'm like, where's the synagogue? There's a synagogue there. But then there's no Jews to go to it. There's like articles about the death of the last Jew in Sighișoara, not by any untoward means, he just died of old age, but there's none there. So you could literally go someplace where it's nothing but Caucasian Christians.
Now that's something. I mean, what was that like? Let me ask you this question. I'll ask you that too. What was that like to be in a place like that? You had to think that this couldn't have been possible, a dream.
Yeah, I mean, it really was, because I had no idea there was a place that existed like what all of our activists talk about online. You know, I just thought that Europe was a total waste, just like America seems to be. But no, it's not. And it's just a sigh of relief. You know, you can relax. And the problem is those people don't know the threat that is looming over their shoulder, because, you know, of course, there are many people who are going to want to do to those countries what they've done to America when they feel like we've had enough.
There's plenty of non-whites available. Plenty of non-whites. The population is booming. They're ready to go there. Jason, which of the, if you had to pick one city, what city out of the cities you visited where you spend the rest of your life? Just now, you could pick a city that you've never been to before, but just for the purposes of this particular trip, which one would you say that's where I'd live if I had to live in any of the places I just visited?
Prague. Prague was just pure magic, you know. Like I said, to go in those taverns and the food so incredible. Like you're riding around on the public transportation, a bus or something, and you're just maybe starting to get bored. Then you look out the window, and at the bus stop at like 2 a.m. is the most beautiful woman you've ever laid eyes on. It almost hurts. She's so beautiful. And there's so many like that. And yeah, I couldn't say enough about it. Like I said, color and mystery. And there's like a steampunk looking clock in the center of town. You get fresh ham, delicious beer. I mean, there's really nothing like it. I could take any person, you know, for a night in Prague and just blow their mind instantly. If I had one place to go to blow somebody's mind, I'd take them there.
Well, you know, Jason, it seems like there's a great advantage to being backward. Eastern Europe is more European than any place in the West, and they supposedly were behind the times. And I think that's, you know, for example, I realized a while back that the 60s didn't happen in Memphis until the 70s. You know, basically everything that was happening in California in the 60s was happening here in the 70s. So, you know, and that more or less goes with the idea of, do you really think the past was better than the present in Europe, in America, anywhere? What's your
I think that's a no-brainer. Jason, we got 1 minute left.
Yeah, I mean, I would much rather be in some quote-unquote regressive or retro culture, which feels like going back into the 80s, than existing now. And I won't sugarcoat the fact that there are some things that are going to be a little wild and hairy for people who are used to being in constant, American conveniences all the time. Like, they've still got Soviet era trains going in certain parts of Romania, and they have no plumbing system. It's just a hole going out onto the tracks. So there's some pretty wild stuff going on there. None of the outlets work. You want to plug in your phone, good luck, nothing works. But I would much rather have that and not be told to hate myself and be invaded by all these people who are, you know, destroying everything I ever loved.
Jason, thank you so much for this report. Thank you so much for ending this special series this way. I really enjoyed it. Riveting for me to listen to as a friend and as a host. And I thank you for giving us the time tonight as we wrap up March Around the World. JasonKessler.us at Twitter, at The Mad Dimension. You can link over to him at the top of our Twitter page tonight, this Saturday evening. And Jason, we will talk to you again soon. Confederate History Month starts next week, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned for that as another special series kicks into high gear. For Jason Kessler, for Jonas Nielsen, for Simon Roche, and all of our March Around the World guests, I'm James Edwards. For Keith Alexander, our staff and crew, good night, everybody.